We're on. Good morning, everybody. It is a very chilly Wednesday. In fact, I think it's the coldest morning so far this year. And I thought we needed to bring someone in who'd warm us up. And I'm very, very excited to welcome one of my oldest friends, Kate Turkington. Look at you in all resplendent.
And a very good morning to you and a very good morning to everybody. A chilly morning. It's freezing outside.
Balls of a brass monkey.
It's the coldest morning of the year, and I've had no electricity for 2 days. So.
But you've tarted up very nicely for me.
I have, actually.
You have.
It's amazing.
So you're resplendent in glory. I told somebody the other day that I was at your 90th birthday party.
Definitely.
And they said to me, Kate can't be 90. And when I've met people who are in their 30s and 40s who are already old.
Oh, totally.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
And I told them that whenever I see Kate, I feel like I'm as invigorated as if I was sitting around my 30, 40, 50-year-old friends.
You know, one of the good things about growing old, and there are lots of bad things, A, you get very wise.
Yes.
B, you've done so much. You've done so much and you know so much.
But don't you find when you've done so much and you know so much that sometimes when people start to say something, you go, oh, God, I know what they're going to say here.
I don't have friends like that. I got rid of those years ago. One of my daughters once said to me, the trouble with you, Mum, is you only like beautiful, intelligent people. And I thought for a bit and I said, yeah, I don't like ugly, stupid people.
Well, who does? Who does, right?
No, and you know, one of the sexiest men I ever met in
a
very long life.
You didn't have to bring it up now, but
was the writer, John Mortimer. He did Rumpel of the Bailey. Do you remember? Ex-judge writes, he was small, mm-hmm. He looked a bit like a toad. I was enthralled to him. His wit, the power of his mind. The other one was the English wit writer, Peter Ustinov. You were absolutely overcome by the wit and the power. And Peter Ustinov, I wasn't present on this occasion, but you know, Lady Chatterley's Lover only got up banned in the 1960s before you were alive.
That's right.
It's not long, you know, when you think about it. And he had they had a panel on the BBC, and there used to be a woman who regarded herself as the guardian of English morals, Mary Whitehouse, you know, pearls and a cardigan and the hair. You get there. And she was against everything that could anybody could get pleasure from. So there was this panel. It was Peter Ustinov, Mary Whitehouse. Can't remember who the host was. And she said to Peter Ustinov in absolute disgust, would you let your daughter read Lady Chatterley's Lover? And he looked at her and he said, Mum, I don't know about that, but I wouldn't let my gamekeeper.
Peter Ustinov was a very, very interesting man, huh?
Just the power of the mind and the wit. One is entranced. One is entranced by it. And so often, here she is generalizing, because she always generalizes. You meet these beautiful people, beautiful, not the one with the lip.
No, yeah, these lips that they're doing now, dreadful. Those
anyway,
yeah, like fish
but
lips.
Somebody who's genuinely beautiful, and sometimes it doesn't come with brains.
But you did say beautiful and clever.
Yes.
So,
but beauty is also the beauty of the mind.
Yeah, but this is something I was talking to somebody about the other day, and I want you to tell me what you think about this. I think beauty for its own sake is fine.
Yes.
You know? Sometimes it's just...
You know, I was thinking about that every night before I go to sleep. First of all, I pat myself on the shoulder and say, well done, body. Then I have this little list of 5 questions I ask myself. What are you grateful for? Well, I'm grateful for so much. You can't believe family, friends, health, everything. And then what was the highlight of your day? And sometimes it isn't like a major highlight. Sometimes I've seen a robin just hopping into my little courtyard. You know, Cape robins.
Beautiful, happy Cape little birds. Chat.
Or you've seen some flowers or the aloes at the moment, which are breathtaking. That can be a highlight. It doesn't have to be winning the lottery because I haven't won that yet. No, not yet.
Yes, but you will.
And so what's a highlight? What have you learned today? That's a good one.
So hang on, it's what are you grateful for?
What
what's
are you
your
grateful
highlight?
For highlight? What have you learned here? Were you kind to somebody?
Oh.
And then finally, when did you feel most alive? And sometimes you can't answer all those.
I think that's a great way to go to sleep.
It's just like a habit I've always done.
But I suspect you brought up the story because of the robin. I have, just this week, I had a robin in my bathroom. It flew in, and it was stuck in my bathroom, and I had to help it out.
Heavens to
and
Betsy!
They're such pretty
they're
little birds.
Gorgeous.
Red chest and
they're
those little eyes
Ken
of the white.
Ken Newman, the great birding guy who did the first bird guys, he always said they're a very confiding little bird.
That's a cute way of saying it.
And you know, bird, as you probably know, I've been president of Santon Bird Life now for about 15 years. I'm not a twitcher. I won't rush off to a bog, a marsh somewhere and see the lesser-throated Columbine, titmarsh, morph, juvenile. But I do appreciate the birds.
My brother is a big birder.
Is he?
He's up to 800 on his list.
Do you know, I've never counted mine.
I'm sure it must be a lot. Yeah. Because you've seen things like Antarctic birds.
No,
which...
but I don't count those. I only count South African birds in my list.
Yeah, but there are a few that you'd only see if you went into the southern Atlantic.
Yes, but you know... I don't know how many albatrosses there are. I've seen a lot, but if one came up and bit me, I wouldn't know. Well, a very big one. And you know, BirdLife, which is such an amazing organisation, does so much good. Every year they do what they call a flock. So all the birders or many birders from South Africa will go on this outing. But the last 2 years they've been to Marion Island to see all the seabirds. But I suffer from seasickness. I'm seasick on Zoo Lake, so there is no way. And I've done that dreadful crossing from South America to Antarctica, the Drake Passage. That's, you know, the horn of Africa.
Yeah, which Captain... Yeah. Well, Sir Francis Drake, obviously, it's worth named after him.
Yeah.
But Captain Cook did it.
Exactly. And you know, Gail, some of those old sailing ships, they never got round the horn because of the winds and the storms. They tacked back and forward sometimes for months and never actually got round the horn. But you know something is going to be bad when you leave Ushuaia, which is a lovely little, like a little alpine town, bottom of South America, southernmost, they say, town in the world, and you put out to sea, and suddenly behind all the rails and the bars everywhere, they put brown paper bags. So you know it's going
to
be...
At least they have the decency to make them brown paper bags. I went on a ship once, and they had clear ones. Not nice. But it's interesting you bring up South America, because you were in Patagonia a while ago.
This... Alpaca tails from Patagonia. I've been to Patagonia twice. I've been to Chile and Patagonia, and last year I was in Argentinian Patagonia. Absolutely wonderful. You know, it's got these huge icebergs. I think the one we sailed to, you go in small boats, was about 40 k's long. And
good
it's
heavens.
Quiet. They switch off the engine. So, and because of the mineral the minerals in the water. There's no living things. You see the old condor flying overhead. So there's absolute silence, and they ask you for absolute silence. Not many on the boat. All you can hear is the cracking of the ice. The cracking. And you know, they're bright blue. They're turquoise blue. And it's... But the Great Grey Glacier in Chile and Patagonia is now melting at 100 metres a year.
God.
That's a lot.
Mm. And they have those... You don't think of glaciers in the Southern Hemisphere, yeah. But they've got those there too.
Yeah. But I always say to people, if you want to go to Antarctica, and it's on a lot of people's wishes, do it quickly. Do it quickly before it all vanishes, and never go on a Russian ship. Because, mind you, I love the Russians. They're great party animals, most of them. But the Russian ships have a conning tower, so you're higher up, so you're even more liable.
Smashed around.
Yeah, yeah.
But Antarctica, I think, is on most people's bucket list because it's a whole continent, and
yeah.
Very few people can say they've been there.
Yeah, and they're very good because of the Antarctic Treaty. I think still a ship may only take 400 passengers, not more, and you go from the ship in a rubber duck, a rubber dinghy, in your Wellington boots and your red jackets and your thermal underwear and as much clothes, like this morning, in fact, in Johannesburg, and just six of you at a time. And it is otherworldly. It is quite surreal.
What's the coldest you've ever been?
That's an interesting question.
We think geography when we think of cold.
I'm just trying to
I think the coldest I've been is actually...
Tibet.
Everest
Base Camp. Not Tibet. Yes, Tibet. Everest Base Camp, because we went to Everest Base Camp from Tibet. And we went. And the first base camp you go to, don't think it's all these glamorous climbers. It's a squalid sort of tented place with children with runny noses and thin dogs running among the tent. But it's high. So you're gasping for breath. And even though we had lots of clothes on, that was freezing. And we were staying in what was called a simple Tibetan hostelry. It was 12 kilometres from Everest Base Camp, which we limped along. I think finally we hitched a lift. And there was just a hole in the floor of the ablutions. But we had the best views of Everest, they said, for 17 years. And it was full moon. So we arrived at lunchtime. We sat there drinking warm beer and eating greasy noodles and watched the sun go down and the moon come up. And because the ablutions were not, my mother superior wouldn't have approved, we all went out and weed under Everest in the moonlight. But it was so beautiful. It was so,
there's some,
so.
Some patch
time,
of mountain snow that will always forever be Cape Turkington.
And another time I was in India, and we got up at dawn to see Kanchenjunga, which, you know, if you snooze, you lose. There were about 10 of us, and only about 4 of us got up. And it was daughter Tara who said, come on, Mum, we've got to go and see Kanchenjunga at dawn, me and Ma. But do it. And that's what I say about travel. When I think now, Gareth, of the places one can't go back to Tibet. Although I met a couple this week who just come back from Kashmir. And even when I was in Kashmir last, which is about 6 years ago, there were armed troops everywhere. Yeah. Not a woman.
Well,
on
they
the
very
street.
Nearly broke into open
they
war.
They said every six meters, 10 meters soldiers. But the still Kashmir, which is so beautiful. You've got the lakes and the houseboats made of scented sandalwood that have been carved generations ago. It is, and the mountains, Himalayas, it is so beautiful. But one of the things you go, which we did, you go to see the changing of the guard.
Yeah.
I have to put my coffee down. on the Pakistan-India border.
Right.
Well, if ever there was an example of machismo, forget South America, they're like peacocks. The Pakistanis are all in black with black ostrich plumes and helmets, and the Indians were all in whatever, and they come up to each other and they goose step, yeah. And it's like a performance, and heaven help, you know, if one missteps or something, and the locals all go and watch. It was quite a...
Well, that was where the world was focused just a month ago.
Exactly.
Because everyone thought that we might have an outbreak of nuclear war between the two, but they've sorted themselves out.
Do you know, Gareth, I'm going into old fart mode. One of my grandsons said to me recently... We were talking in general. It's wonderful having big family. You can talk about anything. He happens to be a game ranger and he was on leave. So I said to him, I think I told your guys, very portentously, you don't have to look it up because you're a wordsmith. I said, I'm looking up. I said, you know, Stephen, you're living on the cusp of history. Trump, the world is changing. Nation states coming back. And he laughed. He looked at me. He said, Granny, you've been living on the cusp of history for 90 years. Think about it. World War II, Korean War, Vietnam War, Berlin Wall coming down, end of apartheid.
Don't breeze past these, because you told me when we were on the phone to each other the other day that you were in the streets of London on VE Day.
I was.
With your parents.
Yes. My mother was... That's not emotion. I've just got a frog in my throat from the pollution in China. She was a great one. She was the daughter of a Swedish sea captain. And although they had no money, she had this urge to do things and go up and go. And she got us
Doris,
up. We lived about half an hour by train.
Is this Doris?
Yes, from the middle of London. And I remember being... in Trafalgar Square on V-Day, I was 10. The crowds of people kissing, the joy, the unadulterated joy. And I didn't really understand it because, you know, my parents have shielded us to some.
Well, they had, but you also had been evacuated from London. This is a story people don't remember. They may remember because there was an anniversary the other day for VE Day. But you and many children were just packed off. You were given a number and you were sent off to some country house.
I think a fisherman's hut on the north of Broad.
Fisherman's hut. Where
it
were
was,
you?
It was one of the most amazing. The Brits really got their act together. In 4 days... 1.5 million children were evacuated from London. Our parents didn't know where we were going. We were put on a train with a parcel label on us, sent off. And I said to my mother, how could you do this? She said they were dropping leaflets from the skies. The Germans are coming. And this is quite interesting, Gareth. I've got teenage grandchildren now who study history. And a couple of them at some stage were studying World War II. And they came down to chat to me. I said, well, I don't know about a survivor, but anyway. And it was all, but Granny, the Nazis, this, the Nazis. I said, we didn't even know the word Nazi. It was the Germans we were at war with.
Yeah.
It was the German. We'd never heard of a Nazi. And how history is made by the people who write it. Very often, not by the people who make it. And I love the story of Julius Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
Julius Caesar pulled off one of the biggest PR stunts in the world. You know, he was a senator, absolutely on the bones of his ass, as they would say. No money, not doing well. And a bit like Margaret Thatcher, thinks, let's have a war. She had the Falklands War. Let's have a war. It's very good for unifying nations, getting your name known. So he went off to Europe. Think Asterix and Obelix. He went off to Europe. And these little tiny states, sometimes only a few thousand in each, and he conquered them. And then he wrote, still is a textbook. I don't know. I know in British universities, if you're studying Latin, Caesar's Punic Wars.
Right.
And he made out, he conquered
Gallic
half
Wars,
of
Gallic
Europe.
Wars.
The Gallic Wars. The Gallic Wars. Punic came. The Gallic Wars. And the rest is history. They believed him. Finally became emperor.
He starts the third volume with...
Yes. I study it.
Gallia est omnitres... In tres partes unis, I think. So
you know,
Gaul is divided into three parts.
Gaul is divided into three parts.
When he crosses the Rubicon River, because now he's pulled off this PR stunt, and you know the Romans used to bring back their tributes, so they'd march all the slaves down the street, and then they'd hand out the loot to all the soldiers, and there'd be a big celebration, and everyone was very impressed with Julius Caesar. He'd ride on an open chariot with a laurel wreath above his head.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, he said...
Forget Blue Light Brigade. Yeah, they haven't got a clue.
They haven't got anything.
They haven't got a clue.
And then he got himself elected dictator for life.
Yes.
And
that was his mistake.
That was the mistake. Because as soon as he called himself that, they said, no, actually, we don't like this. And a couple of conspirators... got together and made
too
it.
Too brute.
Right, right.
But you know, girls, when I did an English honours degree. You do it from word go. You don't do it after your undergraduate degree. But to do that, you had to study Latin for a year at university. And luckily, I have a very, very good memory. So I just learnt the text off by heart. But other than a mathemat, I couldn't really conjugate. But how helpful it is when you look at language and you see. I can still, because of knowing Latin and French, I can read or put it this way. I can understand what's going on in a Spanish or Italian newspaper. I can't understand people talking. But if I see, because it's so
similar.
But you
lectured English for a while too here in Johannesburg.
Sorry?
You were an English lecturer.
Yes, that fits for years. I had a very anomalous position, of course, because I was a head of television, but I was also an academic teaching in the English department. But what was wonderful about that is I could wear an admin hat when I was head of television, academic hat when I was in the English department, because they didn't know what to do with me. I reported directly to the vice chancellor, and at my leaving party of it, I had four surviving vice chancellors, but it was great because I would do something that I knew probably I shouldn't have done, not for the good of the university, not for the bad, and then say, but I didn't, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't know I was supposed to do that.
The other thing that a lot of people know about you already is that you were on TV right in the early days with the BBC.
In the UK when it was still black and white.
Right, you had your own TV show.
Yeah, several.
In the 60s.
Yeah, the first one was called, I was with the World Service first. The first one was called Late with Kate. It was so late, nobody watched it, I don't think.
What did you do on Late with Kate?
It was mainly political and current affairs stuff. I mean, it was quite... It was very extraordinary to have a woman doing it in those days.
Absolutely.
And I think it taught me my mistrust of politicians from a very, very early age. And how some, now they've all had the media training, but in those days, I interviewed Enoch Powell, interviewed Harold Wilson. Harold Wilson, you know, and some of our politicians could learn this now. It's very useful to have a prop if you're on television.
Harold Wilson
I've
had
got a cup of coffee, but it isn't a prop. I actually need this.
Harold Wilson had a pipe.
He had a pipe.
Oh.
He was Harold Wilson was the Prime Minister of England, UK, and he is still the youngest Don ever at Oxford. He was a Don.
And they were very proudly working class.
And I interviewed him over Rhodesian tiger talks on a barge on the Thames. But he had a pipe, which made him look older. You know, it was. And you asked him a difficult question. He stuck on his pipe, looking thoughtful. Meanwhile, the mind was very clever. His mind was
racing
like,
around,
going like crazy. But interesting, interesting.
Is there anyone you didn't meet that you almost met that
yeah,
you wish you had?
The Rolling Stones ever. I interviewed most of the pop groups, but I missed the...
You missed Mick Jagger and Keith Richards.
I was never a great fan because I was a Beatles fan. I enjoyed their energy. But you know, now, don't know if you saw a couple nights, three nights ago, Paul McCartney joined Bruce Springsteen at a concert somewhere. Yeah. These two old guys. And Paul McCartney, at 82, had the worst wig you could possibly imagine. It was like almost blonde and ragged. And
do you think he's bald underneath?
He's such a nice man, but...
Do you think he's bald?
Oh, I'm damn sure he
is. I thought that was his real hair.
Oh, no.
Really? Is it a bad wig? Oh, God, all right, you're spoiling everything for me.
I once shared the dressing room in Austin, Texas with Dolly Parton.
Oh.
Before she'd had her... Oh, such a nice person. Before she'd had her big boob operation. And she took her wig off and she had this lovely, like, bum fluff, just like... like a newly hatched chick, just all over her head.
Well,
she was such a nice person.
I believe that Dolly Parton, under the wigs, actually has dark hair.
Yes. Well, she had blonde fur.
And that she goes to the shops like anyone else.
Probably.
And people don't recognize her because she doesn't tart up and she doesn't wear the wigs and she doesn't...
And she's, you know, she's a real person.
Yeah.
She's a genuine, genuine person.
Apparently, the most fun is to go and spend a day at Dollywood.
I'm sure.
All right. So we've got Kate Turkington here, and we'll be talking nonsense for a little while. I'm just always
so... Speak for yourself. I'm not talking nonsense.
We have a lot to talk about. Okay. We also have travel.co.za popping in just now, which is obviously something that Kate can help us out with there, too. We sent some people on their first time travel. So they went, a lot of the people who went had never been on a plane before, never been to Cape Town before, saw all the sights and sounds. So it was very exciting for them. First time they'd ever been anywhere. Do you remember when you went somewhere for the first time ever?
Absolutely.
On a plane?
I had just finished university. I had been married for a year. My husband had been... in Nigeria. He'd come down from Oxford and taken the job in Nigeria because it was a £60 kit allowance. That was more money than we'd ever seen in our lives. We didn't even know where Nigeria was. So I was to join him and we had to fly first class.
God, how wonderful.
So BOAC. I had some sort of little hat, might have been a pillbox, white gloves, stockings. And in those days, not tight, so you had suspenders and a suspender belt, stockings. And very unwise, I'd never been on a plane before, and we were flying to AAA, a dress with a pleated skirt, which was not a good thing for a long... I don't think I appeared quite so spick and span when I... But when I got to AAA, got to Kano, in those days, that's in the north of Nigeria, the tribesmen used to come on camels and blow silver trumpets when the planes arrived.
Good heavens.
Absolutely wonderful.
And wow.
I fell in with a couple of crew. We had to spend the night in AAA. And I remember none of us went to bed. I was 20 years old. Yes. No, I was 21. And none of us went to bed. We just sat up all night talking, putting the world... like we're doing now, talking about everything and anything. That's the only time I've been to Tripoli.
Well, I don't know many people who've been to Tripoli.
But I want to go for my trip next year, because I do a trip with friends every year. I'm thinking very seriously about Tunisia. Apparently, Romans, you know, the Romans always made themselves so comfortable.
And, of course, if you go to Tunisia, because you mentioned it already, the Punic Wars, so you could go to what's left of Carthage.
Exactly. And apparently, I'm not quite sure how it's pronounced, Djerba is this beautiful seaside town, gorgeous beaches, no tourists. And I fancy Tunisia, quite fancy.
Are there any places that are too dangerous? For example, I've always been interested in going to Iraq because you've got...
I have, because of the antiquities.
Right, because you could go and visit ancient Babylon and... You know, places like that, which you may have been to.
I'm not prepared to do that.
You haven't been there?
No, I haven't. No. I'm quite sorry I didn't. And as I was saying, you know, people mustn't save their money till they retire and the kids have gone, because they'll get old and creaky and they may not be able to travel. Go now, take your children.
But you've been saying that for 40 years.
That's why I don't have any money, because anytime we had any money, we traveled and we took the kids.
And Iran?
No, I haven't been
also
to Iran or Iraq. I've been to Pakistan, which is very useful, because when you need something for your phone or you need some gadget, you go to one of the malls and you find a booth in the middle and you start talking cricket with the usually Pakistani guy. They will look after you like you can't believe.
Cricket, huh?
You can't believe. India, love India. Again, that's one of my favourite.
All right, we'll save the travel for a moment or two. You told me that you watched the men's final in the French Open on Sunday.
I was a wreck at the end of it, an absolute wreck. I've been alive for a very, very long time. I've been watching tennis for decades. That's the best men's final I have ever, ever seen. It was absolutely brilliant. Three match points down Alcaraz and two sets down. And he manages to win, and he's 22.
Phenomenal.
The only problem is, just as Nadal and Djokovic and Federer dominated the tennis scene for so long, because Sinner and Alcaraz are so young,
they'll be here
22,
for a long time.
It's going to be for years. But then it'll be a good rivalry, and they seem nice kids. They really do.
Well, you must have had a very busy day on Sunday because you were watching the men's open, but you also had a granddaughter in the Comrades.
Absolutely. So we were all, we had the finish line. She's such a feisty. She's beautiful. She's tiny. As she crossed the finish line, she had her arms up, and I don't know about times, but she did it in 9 hours, 47 minutes, which apparently for a first run is amazing. But she said, now she's recovered. She's talking about doing it back to back. But sorry, Tessa, I'm thinking great grandchildren.
I've never understood running or cycling.
Nor me. When I was a kid, you cycled everywhere because during World War II, no petrol, no cars, no nothing. You cycled everywhere. You walked everywhere. But one of my very best friends is a knee surgeon, very famous knee surgeon. He plays the bagpipes at my birthday party.
Okay.
And he, although he's a runner himself, he says he sees all these prospective patients because human knees aren't supposed to be pounding pavements. They've got good shoes now. But even so, they're all going to end up like me, with two replaced knees. And I don't have replaced knees because I'm a runner. It's because I'm old.
Well, you're in remarkable condition. You're in showroom condition, which people will always ask, well, what's your secret? And I think people are just confounded by longevity. They think longevity is a miraculous thing.
But I also think old people let themselves get old. That sounds very harsh. But people suddenly, when they're in their late 60s or something, suddenly decide they're old and they go off to retirement villages where everybody's old. And it's not all of them. I have, but you know, looking at it, I only have two friends in their 80s who are both younger than me. All my friends, like you, are much younger.
But you.
Me.
Yeah, well, I think there are people who are in their 30s who are already old up
totally.
Here.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
And to
totally.
Me, there's no point in wishing that you were older than you are or not being happy about what you've got. And most people, I think, who are happy, who do things like what you told us just now you do every night before you go to sleep, that you rattle off five questions about what you're grateful for and have I been kind to someone today? And these are very simple things to live by.
Yeah.
There's no secret.
I don't know whether it's I have a superb memory. I really do. I don't remember names. It's so interesting. I can remember when I was 3, 4, the 6 months I was evacuated, I have absolutely no memory of. Now, a shrink would say it's classic blackout. I have absolutely no memory. I remember being put on the train with the paper parcel label, and I remember coming home to a new house. But otherwise, absolutely nothing. Interesting.
Was your family house destroyed?
No.
Was it bombed?
It may well have been. My father, who was a welder, had got a job at de Havilland's aircraft factory in Hertfordshire, so we moved out of bad part of. But, Gareth, you were talking about historical occasions. It's just recently been D-Day.
Right.
D-Day, for people who don't know, was when the Allied invasion of Europe took place. And because we lived by an aerodrome, June the 6th was the day of the invasion, my mother took us into the garden early. It was a lovely June day. And to me, as a little girl, it seemed as if the sky was black with aeroplanes.
My God.
Wave after wave wave of Allied bombers was going over too. And there was a corollary to that story, because a few years ago I was asked to talk at a D-Day anniversary at one of the country clubs, and two Spitfires flew overhead. Must have been about 10 years ago. And I burst into tears. Totally out of the...
Phenomenal.
Blue. Totally out of the blue. But aren't we lucky to have memories? You don't want riches. You don't want a fancy car. You know, Bruce Whitfield once asked me, I was doing his money show. I'm not a good person because I don't have money and I'm not bothered. I've got a roof over my head. I've got a family. I've got a dog. I've got a car.
That's all
anyway,
you need.
He said to me finally, and I adore Bruce, but he said to me finally, what would you do if a red Maserati drew up beside you at the traffic lights? What would you say? I said, how vulgar.
Parvenu.
Totally.
So what would you do with a million rand if you had
it? Give it away.
Give it away.
Yeah. Give some to family. Oh, I've got to tell you a lovely story.
Yeah.
A friend of mine drives an awful old Ford truck. And about 4 or 5 years ago, she came to see me. About 5 years ago, before I did the final downsizing thing, when I lived in Midrand. And she arrived in a brand new truck. And I said, but Wendy, brand new truck. She said, it's a bit of a story. It's not mine. It's my son-in-law's. Oh, says I, how come? Because he's a butcher. I know he doesn't have any money. He had an Irish aunt called Aunt Rose. And Aunt Rose was a bit otherwise and a wee bit away with the fairies. And the whole family had neglected her and really ignored her and turned her out. But Donovan would take her shopping and always kept up with her because he liked her. Anyway, she gets hold of him one day and says, I've had this call from Santon, the lottery. And he thinks, oh, sure, it's, you know, it's a joke or whatever.
Lost her
mind.
Anyway,
they kept phoning and sending a message. He takes it into the lottery. I don't know if it's still in Sandton. She'd won 34 million rand. This is a true story. Suddenly, all the relatives came out of the woodwork.
Oh, I'm sure. Suddenly, they were all
the
best friends.
Came out of the woodwork. Yeah. They came from Ireland. They came over. The story got even worse or better. Auntie Rose got cancer. She got pancreatic cancer about 3 months after winning the lottery. And she died. She left all the money to a cat home. That is, you know,
a cat's home.
You can't make up my stories. You can't make up my stories. So, but all they had, all they got, Donovan got a new truck. That was all that came out of there.
And the rest went to the cat's home.
Went to some kind of pits. Maybe SPCA. My friend Wendy tells it went to a cat's home.
You know, you hear people about. You hear stories about people who leave their money to the cat's home. I didn't know it actually happened.
Well, it was animals. It wasn't people.
My mother often threatens. She says, if you're not nice to me, I'll leave everything to the cat's home.
I don't have anything to leave, so. But I do say, I sit with my grandchildren, I say, not when I'm dead, I'd like you to have that picture. Or, but you know, Gareth, it's so healthy.
Yeah, it is.
Because
it's very normal.
I know somebody who's in her 80s who's perfectly well and healthy, who won't talk about death, won't talk about, it's an absolute taboo subject, where I'm always saying, no, when I'm dead, so-and-so, why not? Try not to drop dead when I'm sitting on this very comfy sofa.
I sometimes tell people about your former husband, Alan's wake, which I was at.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it was the most wonderful day, and everybody was terribly happy, and,
and you
there,
know,
were, there were happy stories, and all the grandchildren said what they loved about him.
I once went to a wake in Sligo in the west of Ireland that lasted for 3 days, but there's a pretty formulaic invitation, and it says, bring something to eat, something to drink, and something to say.
Lovely. Lovely.
Perfect.
That's what you want.
Perfect.
I was at a memorial on Saturday for, you remember Darren Scott?
I was actually at Wanderers for this. I was at a birthday party.
Okay. Well, I didn't go to the wake afterwards. I probably should have. But it was happy. It was a happy thing. You know,
of course.
A life well lived. You're celebrating someone a lot of people knew.
Exactly.
Sometimes you only meet the people that you didn't know in their lives at the funeral.
Exactly.
You know, sometimes
some people you'd never want to meet again.
Well, it's always funny to me that you have these funerals and stories that come out of them where, where the wife meets the other wife or the girlfriend.
I've just come back from hot air ballooning over Turkey. And
Cappadocia. Cappadocia,
oh,
yeah.
It was wonderful. Wonderful. Anyway,
is it as pretty as they say it is?
Sorry?
Is it as pretty as they say it is?
Oh, it's not pretty. It's surreal. They say fairy chimneys, and you think fairy chimneys. These are, they're higher than Michelangelo.
Good heavens,
in Sandton.
Okay. All
right. They're huge, and you float over this at dawn with 100 other balloons as the dawn comes up. Among this, it's more like a moon. It's more like surreal or... It's absolutely beautiful. But going back to wakes, I said to my family and the people I was with, listen, if I fall off my perch or fall out of a balloon, you're not to take the... Once you're over 80, it's very hard to get travel insurance. So I was just laying the groundwork. I said, don't bring the body back. It's going to be too expensive. Go to a Turkish crematorium. Turkey, as you know, has beautiful pottery. Each of you buy a beautiful pot. You can each have some of the ashes. Then you can bring them back. Back here. But what a sensible... And some of them are going, oh, Kate, but it's sensible.
Yes, I agree.
It's sensible. And it would have been interesting to see the inside of a Turkish. Did you have a Turkish bath when you were in Turkey?
I did. I went to, in Istanbul to a
hammam.
To proper hammam.
Yeah.
You get massaged and they wash you with those pile foam all over you.
We did that.
It's incredible.
You probably went to the one, the 500-year-old one, where they lay you out stark naked on a slab, like a piece of cod.
Right.
You're on a slab. And, I mean, the women who work there, their grandmothers, their great-grandmothers, they're Roman, they'd be there, and they're so businesslike and professional. And some of my friends said, oh, they didn't know about taking everything off. I said, hey,
they don't care.
Worry you.
They don't. They're not
don't
worried.
Care.
No.
It was wonderful. And they wash your hair. They put you between their knees and wash their hair.
It's probably the first time I've been washed since I was a baby.
Exactly.
Like
and it's comforting.
It is.
It's quite comforting.
And I thought about that marble slab that they put me on. And I thought, you know, this could come from a Roman temple.
It had. It had been there for 500 years on the dome. A beautiful dome above you. Oh, it was stunning. I'd done it before and I talked all my friends into doing it.
Turkey is very, very cool. I think Turkey's an underestimated destination, especially for South Africans.
Totally.
Because you can afford to go. It's almost one-to-one.
Exactly.
Was at the time I went. And it's
now,
charming, and the food's lovely, and the people are lovely, and it's just, it's
and
great.
The culture, I mean, at one stage I was leaning up against a 1600-year-old Roman wall, which blends seamlessly into a flower shop, which blends seamlessly into a Greek. It's the most wonderful, wonderful city.
Well, there's
wonderful public transport. Wonderful. We went on the metro. We took trams. We took buses.
Much better
the
than
traffic.
The traffic's
makes
terrible.
Johannesburg look like Pofada. I mean, not that I've ever been to Pofada.
Well, Moon Dancer says, "What a gem! Kate is incredible." Yeah, that's why.
That's why
we asked her to come here this morning.
Thank you.
Oh, by the way, James, put up the comments because I haven't. I've decided not to open up my laptop this
morning.
And
we're quiet. We're quite hardened.
Yeah, we can handle negative comments. So,
totally.
If there are any of those, bring them
up. Are we allowed to respond to them?
No, we're okay with those. You can. You could say whatever you like. You see, that's the other nice thing. I said to my mum the other day, because she's now in her 70s, and I said to her, you could say whatever you like to people.
Slip of a girl.
Yeah. Well, but you could do anything you want.
You
don't have to put up with anyone's nonsense anymore.
You can.
And you can get away with it because people will say, it's just eccentric Kate.
Totally,
don't worry about her. She didn't mean it when she said she hopes you trip on your tits.
When you're young, you want everybody to like you. You want to make an impression. Yeah. When you're old, let me use an Irish expression, not the one I'd like to use. You don't give a tinker's cuss. You don't give a tinker's cuss. You really don't.
Did you enjoy being on with Warris and PH?
Oh, I loved it. PH sounds like a chemical compound, as I said to him. Oh, yes, they were great. And, you know, because I have a lot of young people in my – well, they're not that young. I mean, they must be 30.
Yeah, they're in their 30s.
I suppose they are young. But I also have teenagers in my orbit. What I don't know about the sex life of Johannesburg teenagers, you don't want to know, because they tell granny everything.
Sure.
They don't tell parents.
How has that changed? How do you think the sex life of...
Listen, Gareth, nobody ever listens to their parents, ever.
Yeah.
Never.
No.
But grandchildren listen to their grandparents, I find. I have got rid of so many boyfriends and girlfriends for saying, she's awful. You've got to get rid of her. She's awful. And the two who are now married have wonderful partners with the Turkington seal of approval.
Oh, you gave the seal of
the
approval.
Turkington. Okay. I did. One of my friends I once gave the Turkington seal of approval to his girlfriend. That was a mistake.
So here, Travelling Ninja Turtle says, I'm so envious of your grandchildren, Kate. Oh. I could listen to your stories all day.
Sometimes they do. The other thing you have to learn as a grandparent is keep your mouth shut.
Oh, right.
Totally. Because sometimes you see things happening that the parents must deal with. And like, let me give you an example. Let's say one of your own children smokes. You're going to say to them, you shouldn't be smoking. Then you've said it. You can't say it again because you're nagging. Meanwhile, you'll say to the grandchildren, tell your mother or father they shouldn't be smoking or whatever. Mm-hmm. Also, table manners aren't quite what they used to be.
I wasn't
they
allowed.
They are not allowed ever to get a phone out and sit looking at their phone if they come down to talk to me.
I wasn't allowed to eat with my parents until I could eat properly.
No, absolutely. They do. If we do go up to a restaurant, their table manners. Although I did say to one of them, really, it's better to pour your beer into a glass than drink it straight out of a bottle.
That's a good idea.
In some fancy restaurant. I'm not a restaurant person. I like having people at home.
Me too.
And family at home. And going to people's
service. But cooking is quite boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cooking's boring.
Yeah.
So let's get back to travel because we've got Zianda here. Hello, Z.
Hey.
You look fantastic this time of the week. This is Kate. All right, so Zianda is with travel.co.za, and I've known her for a little bit. Kate I've known for a long time, and Kate is the doyen of travel. She knows everywhere and everything, and she's met all the people. No, you have. I'll say it for you.
I will tell you. He says we've known one another for a long time. I used to do, for 20 years, in fact, a program on 702. My very first producer was Gareth.
I was a terrible producer, James.
You were wonderful. But in the end, I said to 702 management, please give him his own program. Please give him. He used to call in, it was a call-in show, pretending to be somebody else. So he'd say, I'm Alastair, and I'm living in Benoni, and I don't like what you're saying. I want you to do so-and-so. And in those days, you couldn't see your producer.
No, we were in a booth.
He was behind a glass box.
Yeah, it was better.
Yes, much better. It was
right,
wonderful.
So I want Z to tell us, because this weekend, the one that's just passed, she took a whole lot of first-time travelers to Cape Town.
Exciting.
So these are people who had never, either they'd never been in a plane before, but they'd certainly never seen Cape Town before. One of them, our own Nomcebo, who works here at The Real Network with us. Beautiful. Another one was Jane Malachi, who of course has been a part of my life for 12 years and longer. And Jane must have been in her element.
She was a ball.
Tell us about it. Who were they? Why? What? When? Where?
Okay, yes. I am from Tourvest Travel Services. Yes. And
great company.
It's a wonderful company.
That's
it's a
an unsolicited testimony.
There we go.
Okay. Anyway, carry on.
It's a wonderful company. We have 5 divisions, and we sat down, we identified staff members who has never traveled, who has never been on a flight, on a plane, and we grouped them. I took 24 staff members to Cape Town.
Look how wonderful.
And it was so beautiful.
Look at that.
It was blissful. Oh, my goodness. That's me over there.
Were some of them frightened of going on the plane?
They were. But, you know, seeing their faces light up when they just enter the plane and taking pictures of every single moment, you know, while they are checking in, seeing their bags, you know, one of the fascinating thing is when we came back and I saw Jane. So we were waiting for our bags and Jane saw her bag. She was just documenting the whole thing.
You see, these are the things that if you travel as much as Kate does and as as much as many of us have. You forget the little things
you
like,
do.
Oh my God, my bag.
You do.
Right?
You do.
Yeah. It's exciting.
When you lose it.
Yeah, when you lose it, it's a different story.
Oh my goodness, I thought I lost
mine. So what did you make them get up to in Cape Town? What did you put on the agenda?
So the agenda was, we had a lot of young yeah. people. So one of the things that we did is to visit our own restaurants. We have restaurants, Key 4 in the waterfront, at the waterfront, rather. They did the red bus tour, and it was so lovely. It was cold, but we just want to be upstairs, and they were just taking beautiful pictures.
Look there.
The weather good? Was the weather good?
The weather was good on the first day. It was warm, and I was like, hey, this is summer.
Yeah.
But the following day, on Friday, it was cold. That's when we took the red bus.
That was so... Did you manage to get to the aquarium?
We did manage to get to the aquarium.
Right. That's one of my favorite places.
We did. But, it was just so heartbreaking when we didn't get the opportunity to actually go on the boat cruise. The weather was bad.
Oh, why?
Bad.
You
would have been so seasick.
Yeah.
No, it was a good, probably a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, we enjoyed ourselves. They documented every single moment from the food. You know, they were taking pictures of the food, laughters, funny jokes, making jokes. It was just so beautiful. Like every moment they were taking pictures, I feel like I was just...
How did you choose those 12 people?
So different divisions. We then went to their general managers. We're like, please... check in your divisions who has never traveled. I mean, we have learnerships that we run a program for the whole year. So most of those students, they have never traveled. We have even people who have been in the company for 10 years, more than 10 years, 5 years. And the general managers will then identify those people and give
See,
us
See, Kate,
list.
You can't be at a travel company and not have traveled.
No, absolutely. But you know, having said that, girls, it's amazing. Just before Christmas, I finished updating a big international travel guide to South Africa, mm-hmm. Photos, mm-hmm. Essential travel guide. And I was doing with my daughter Tara, we did the whole of Mpumalanga. So we're going to posh game lodges, crew got all over the place. So often the travel agent hadn't been to a lodge or they'd given the clients false expectations. You know, if that's something you must never do. What was great, and I mean, the price of some of these lodges now, they were packed. They were with foreigners, Russians, Americans. And I must just say something here. The Americans, you know, we complain about South Africa a lot, mm-hmm. of course we do. The Americans were saying... We told them, and the camps were full of Americans. We said to them, because many were complaining about President Trump, we said, you know, we have a government of national unity. What? They said, a government of national unity? We could never in America ever. And I said, look, it's a bit creaky, it's young, it's learning to work. People are astonished that we have a government of... We forget that. We forget how far we've come in 30 years. And when you think of America and how polarised mm-hmm. it is now, there's sort of no middle ground. But from your point of view, travel, Americans still flocking to
South Africa. Is a very, very popular tourist destination. We've got wonderful things to show the world.
And affordable.
Absolutely. And Cape Town is a bit of a jewel.
It is.
Exactly.
It is. And so just to add on that, what better way, I mean, we are in a travel industry.
Yes.
And what better way for us to sell the experience? We have had these people selling these products. So
now
they can sell the experience.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So for me, it's a win. They experienced it. It was beautiful. They know what we have, the products that we have in Cape Town. They can sell it better because they have experienced it.
Was there a lot of drinking?
No.
No. Because I know you guys are Tour Best Travel Services. You guys, big time. Kate, don't believe a word she's telling you. These guys know how to really let rip.
No, we do.
Oh, yeah.
No, we do. But not a lot. You know, we it was moderate, you know. I was just taking care of it.
And, you know, the other thing is, these people, it's like a pebble in a pond. They're now going to tell their friends, their clients, their families about it. And you know, that's the very best advertising.
Word of mouth.
Marketing for travel is word of mouth. It's word of mouth. It's, you know, it really is. It's not paying fantastic sums to advertise it. I went with Tour Vest, I went to such and such a camp and had such a fabulous time. And it's amazing how word spreads.
Definitely.
But you guys at Tour Vest have a lot of properties. You've got amazing hotels and lodges. Yeah. You've got restaurants. You've got shops that you're part of. You know, it's a massive, massive business. And now you're international as well.
Yes.
You know, there are divisions. it's incredible. And this is a South African made company that's among the biggest and best in the world, and it's something worth celebrating. And I think it's great that the people who work there are being looked after.
They have.
And that there are things that they can look forward to. If you'd never traveled anywhere before, you've been stuck in some office for 3-4 years, everybody's talking about, oh, they're going here and they're going there, and you suddenly get your chance.
Yeah.
And
lovely.
So I find, you know, visitors to South Africa, everybody remarks on the friendliness of South Africa. When I write this last guidebook, I actually write the greeting is, good morning, how are you? We say that automatically.
Yes,
if you're
yes.
coming up the stairs here, I'll say, good morning,
and how are you?
Yeah.
You try doing that to a checkout person in
Austria.
In Somerset.
in China.
I don't know, because there's a funny woman here.
Yeah.
But it's the friendliness and the good service
and
the affordability and what you get. You know, a 5-star hotel in South Africa, you're not going to get for that price a 5-star hotel in Istanbul London or whatever.
So, what did they love the most?
The food.
Really? Food,
we
huh?
were eating every single moment.
God. So they all come back much heavier.
Me too.
What did they like? Was there any sort of general consensus about what they like best? Or did they all have something different?
You know, I think most of them, they enjoyed the flight.
Yes.
All of them, they, it was the first experience.
Yes.
So from us going inside the flight, they were taking videos.
Taking off.
And, you know, if you had an iPhone, we had like a phrase word, iPhone. So we have to give them iPhones because, I mean, they take better quality pictures. And they were just taking pictures. My phone is so full with videos of them in a flight, them taking pictures. Because I had to check, is everybody in a flight on our WhatsApp group? And everybody was taking pictures. We are all here.
That's where people lose themselves.
And you know, we forget because when you're a very regular traveler, the thing you don't look forward to is
the flight.
You dread the flights.
Yeah.
I'm not rich at all. I don't have any money, so I fly steerage. You know, I'm flying economy.
Yeah.
And you just dread a fly at night so you can take a sleeping pill and get it over. So it's so lovely to hear. And it reminds me, and I'm sure Gareth, of our first flight and the wonder of it.
Yeah.
And did anybody freak out at all or... Well, they were quite cool once they were in the plane.
Just one lady was freaking out. Oh, my goodness, you know, I don't know what to do. I'm like, just relax, you know, drink water. You know, I had to check up on her. But when I turned and looked at her, She was just having a ball, you know. And I was actually thinking about this morning, and I was like, Z, when was your first flight? And how was your experience?
Do you remember?
I do.
When was it?
It was 2009, if not 2008 or 2010.
Yeah.
I was part of a musical group, Africa Umoja.
Yeah.
And so I was still new, fairly new, 2 weeks in the industry, and one lady fell sick. They then said, you are going with us. They didn't change the details of the flights. I was traveling as Siviwe.
Oh, wow. So you traveled under a false ID.
Yes.
Wow.
I almost didn't get in the flight. And, you know, I was not pampered. I was not babysitted. I was just, you know, traveling behind everybody and trying to do everything.
Well, somebody said now, just pop that comment back up here. That's Judas. She said, I saw the same look on my colleague's face when she first traveled with me for work to KZN. She was a little nervous on the plane, but when she saw the beach for the first time, it was priceless.
It was.
It's wonderful. Yeah.
It was. It was very special. When we were in Kemp's Bay, but let me tell you, they went inside.
They went into the water?
They went into the water.
Oh. Have you got any more pictures, James?
Yes, I think there's one that I took.
Oh, my God, right. I mean, that's not a great day in Cape Town.
It was not a great day, but they went there. As a black South African woman, we know when we see the beach, we just want to go there, and we believe that it takes away all the bad,
all my sins away. They do. They look like a group of pilgrims. Yeah. They look exactly.
And a funny thing. And a funny thing was last year, because this was the second group that we took to Cape Town for the first time travelers. So my manager Tracy Vandenberg took the first group last year in end of May. And one of the funny stories that she shared was that a couple of people were trying to get the water so they can travel back with it at home.
Yes, in a bottle.
In a bottle. Yes. And Tracy was like, no, I'm not sure they will allow that in a flight.
They won't. They won't let you on a plane with that.
They won't.
But we understand that whenever we go to Durban, I mean, obviously we won't go in a flight. We will travel by car. We will then, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I'll give you a very good tip for when you get very old. It's worked about 3 times. It worked in Istanbul immigration, which amazed me at security. I have a bottle of water, and I say, I'm very good at going into frail little old granny mode. So I went into frail little old granny mode. I said, it's for my medication.
And they let you have it.
Truly, I've got through about 3.
Yeah. I'm sure you have lots of useful tips. I don't know if you should share them all.
No.
All right, well, Z, very nice.
I don't advise it. You've got to be able to get away with that.
You've got to be an old granny to get away with that.
You have, exactly.
Z, thank you very much for coming to see us.
Thank you.
And Gary, we'll catch up with you soon. And well done for taking all these people on their first trip.
Lovely story.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. So special.
It was just so special,
so
you know.
Special.
The tearful thank yous were so blissful.
And they will never, ever forget.
They will never forget.
It's definitely something very special. I saw it last year. I saw those looks on people's faces that were in the comments as well. Just, you know, the things you take for granted. Humans have this funny thing where we reset our default to whatever the best experience we recently had was.
Yes.
And we forget how grateful we would have been for that just a year before.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Kate Turkington remains with us, and we've got lots of gold to mine with her. So much to talk to her about.
Won't be false gold either.
No, of course not. And thank you, Z. And make sure you go to travel.co.za so you can book your travel experience over there with them.